Okay, tonight we learn, begin to learn, the Haftarah of Parshas Yecheskel, of Parshas Va'era, which is in Sefer Yecheskel, I'm sorry. And the Haftarah once again brings us to a Navi who we discussed a couple of weeks ago, whose Nevuah spanned the end of the Bayis Rishon, the last kings of the Bayis Rishon, and actually extended into the Galus. And the Haftarah has obvious connections to the Parsha. Here, the Achalufei Minhagim, we begin from Pasuk Hafei, Koyamar Hashem. The meaning of Teiman is to skip the first two Pesukim and start with the third Pasuk, which is more clearly connected to the Parsha. Let's see.
What we said, why did, is Yecheskel the only Navi that he says Ben Adam
too? I mentioned to you that he's called Ben Adam uniquely because he saw the visions and retold of his seeing the visions of the heavenly spheres about the angels, etc. So he was privileged to be, so to speak, in heaven. And he was reminded, Ben Adam, of his mortality. Ben Adam, you're a mortal man. You're not. Don't get any ideas into your head because of what you were privileged to see. And he's uniquely called Ben Adam because of that. So this is the Nevuah of Yecheskel. Koy Amar Hashem Aleikim. Bekapsi Espes Yisrael Min Ha'amim. The day will come when I will gather the Jewish people from among the nations, Asher Nafutzu Bam, among whom they have been spread, V'nikdashti Bam La'enei Hagoyim, and my name will be seen as holy in the eyes of the nations, V'yashu Al Admasam, Asher Nasati La'avdi Li'akov. Now, Rabbi Yossi Naipshitz points out this is not a nevuah about Mashiach's times, as one might think, but rather a nevuah about the coming together at the time of the Bayis Sheni, the return to the Bayis Sheni, and the key word is La'avdi Li'akov. The first arrival in Eretz Yisrael is seen as Chas Avram, the days of Mashiach seen as David, the time of Malchus David, Mashiach ben David. The Bayis Sheni, the Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavar Am Zukhanisa, Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem is a Bayis Rishon, Ad Yavar Amcha Hashem is Bayis Sheni. Bayis Sheni is seen as the Gula of Yaakov. The name Yaakov is, I've mentioned to you in the past, the inferior name of the two names Yaakov and Yisrael. Yisrael is when Klal Yisrael is in their higher level, and Gulas Yisrael will refer to times of Mashiach. And Gulas Yaakov is a key to the Gula of Yaakov Avinu. Rabbi Yonasan Aipshis mentions that in Yaakov's dream, Eretz Yisrael was folded under him. The land of Eretz Yisrael was folded under him. The land of Eretz Yisrael in the time of Mashiach is greater than that. Is called the Malchus of Eser Amimin as opposed to Shiva Amimin. It's more. And therefore, La'avdil Yaakov is the smaller Gula, which is the time the Klal Yisrael came into Bayis Sheni. The V'nikdashti Bam La'enei Hagoyim is that during the Bayis Sheni, the nations recognized the supernatural manner in which Klal Yisrael returned. It's not normal for a nation driven from its land to come back. And if they say that about a 70-year Golos, how much more so today when it's 2,000 years after a Churban, and Klal Yisrael, Jewish people, are coming back to the land, to Eretz Yisrael. And the nations don't recognize it, but nevertheless, it's an occurrence which can only be attributed to a Bayri Yilam. V'yashvu aleha lovetach. They will sit in their land securely, as happened when Klal Yisrael came back and established itself under the protection of the Umas Ha'ilam. Uvanu batim in atochramim, and once again, Jews planted homes, built homes, and planted vineyards, v'yashvu lovetach, and lived there securely, ba'asais yishvatim b'chal ha'shatim ha'isam. When you read the story of Ezra, how there were many that tried to prevent Klal Yisrael from returning, misviv ha'isam, those around them, v'yadu ki ani Hashem alekehem. And Klal Yisrael should recognize this is the coming back in the Bayis Sheni. I mentioned in the Shir on Eicha how Eretz Yisrael doesn't give forth its bounty when Jews are not living there. that during the period that Jews don't live in Eretz Yisrael, the land is pretty much a wasteland. The Beis Halevi makes this point from Sukkim in Eicha that no nation has ever set up a sovereign land, a sovereign government in Eretz Yisrael, even though it's 2,000 years from the Golos of the Bayesheni until a state was established in our times. In that whole intervening time, the country's empires controlled Eretz Yisrael, but never set up any type of independent country there, as there's been just about everywhere else in the world. There's never been a country there. And the reason for that is, when Jews are not in Eretz Yisrael, the land can't really support. It doesn't give forth support. It's a desert. It's a desolate land. And now we see Klal Yisrael coming back, and the land once again giving forth its blessing. And that's... Excuse me? There are other countries that are desert, but they're desert and they remain desert. And this is a land that, when Klal Yisrael is there, can sustain millions of people who live there. And when Klal Yisrael is not there, there haven't been great numbers of people that, when Jews are not there, there haven't been great numbers of people that are able to live in the land. And everything you see built, that's one thing about going to Israel. When you go all around Yerushalayim and you see hilltops with homes, it was all desolate. It was all, as recently as 1900, the early 1900s, Yerushalayim was confined to within the wall. And, outside of the walled city, it was all sand. It was all the earth.
That's the definition of the Green Line.
What?
That's the definition of what they refer to as the Green Line.
Why is it the Green Line?
Because on the Jewish side, it's green. On the Arab
side. Oh, really? Is that why they call it the Green Line? That's nice. Okay. Okay. Very good. Very good. Okay, I thought it's the Green Line because they let you on this side. It's the red side and the green side, but okay. Okay. Nothing green on their side. Okay. That's it. So, anyway, this is the beginning of the Haftarah. The rest of the Haftarah starts by talking about Parai and Mitzrayim. The Shaychis of the first two Psukim, it could be just added to start with a Divrei Bracha. On the other hand, Va'era is also the Bracha of Gula. It talks about Kadosh Baruch Hu's promise of Gula to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, the first two Psukim do have a Shaychis to the Parsha as well. Perek Chavtes, which is the next part of the Haftarah, begins Bashano HaAsiris, in the 10th year of the kingdom of Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. Now, the last 23 tumultuous years of Jews living under the Bayis Sheni began with the passing of the King Yeshio, who was king for 31 years. And in the four remaining kings were kings for 3 months, 11 years, 3 months, 11 years, one after the other. And they were Eliakim or Yehoyakim, was the first king, followed by Yechaniah, who was the king subsequently, and Tzidkiyahu was the fourth king, and I'm missing one. Okay, I'll get to it. I'll remember shortly. So they were kings for 3 months, 11 years, 3 months, 11 years, and I don't remember names. I used to make fun of my we all used to make fun of my uncle. He used to call us all by the wrong names. Like the odds are he would get somebody right. No, you know, like. So now I'm living through that myself. But okay. At any rate, the point is that this is Bashana Asiris of King Tzidkiyahu. This is 1 year before the final Chorban. Hoyadvar Hashem Elai Leimar. Ben Adam, and as we mentioned, this is the reference to Yecheskel. Simponecha al Pari Melech Mitzrayim. Say Nevuah about Pari, the king of Egypt, Vihinabe, Olov, Val Mitzrayim Kula, and say the following Nevuah regarding him and Mitzrayim in general. Daber Viomarto, Koyamar Hashem Alekim, Hinini Olecha Pari. I'm on to you, Pari Melch Mitzrayim. Hatanim Hagodel, Haroivitz Besech Yairav, the great Tanin. There's a difference of opinion how to translate Tanim. Hirsch translates Tanim as crocodile. As the great crocodile the crocodiles are in the, Yairav. There was one, translator who suggested Makas Tzvardeya was crocodiles rather than frogs. We all know it's frogs because Jewish children have been taught it's frogs all along. Tanim is used to refer to a serpent. Here it may be a great fish or whatever it is. Haroivitz Besechi Oirav, who lives in the Yar, Ashamar Liya Oiriv Adi Asisini. Here I'd like to explain a little about the Nilus, the Nile. And the idea that the Nile was an Avodah Zarah. The Nile is the greatest river in the world. The Nile, is a river which flows for over 4,000 miles. I think it's about 4,300 miles. And it flows, when you look at the map, you get the wrong image. You get the image, it comes from the Mediterranean Sea and flows down. It goes the other way. It flows from Uganda, the Great Lake in Uganda, which is in the middle of Africa. Lake Victoria. It's not called Victoria anymore, but I think it's called Lake Uganda now. But and it flows up all the way through Africa and empties in two tributaries. In Egypt, it splits into two and empties into the Mediterranean Sea. Now, first of all, we all learned in Rashi how miraculously the water overflows. Pari would go out and the water would overflow towards him and it would irrigate the land. Now, first of all, you have to know that much of Africa is desert. And the Nile is really the lifeblood of Africa. If you take a map of Africa, there are maps in the atlas that show by color code the places that have vegetation, the places that don't. For the most part, it's the Nile and its area around the Nile, which is the entire breadbasket of Africa, which is the irrigation. The northern part of Africa. It's a lifeline to Africa. Now, what? Okay, I don't mean exclusively, but this is what it is. Take a map of Egypt, it's certainly that way. And all around it in northern Africa is desert land. Now it doesn't rain. It does not rain in Egypt, except on the coastal cities. And the way the irrigation is from the Nile. Now the way the Nile works is the following. Lake Uganda, or Lake Victoria as it was called, it sits under great mountain ranges all around it. And the snows of the winter melt in the summer. The summer there being a different part of the year than here. But they melt, and the lake suddenly, when temperatures rise, the lake is suddenly swollen by great amounts of water. You're talking about extraordinary amounts of water. And that water travels down the Nile. The recent flooding of the Mississippi, I think St. Louis has recently been flooded. So they tell you downstream, you know, in 2 weeks downstream, they're going to have flooding there. You know, they're not Nevi'im, it's just the water travels and it think it's going to get there, you know, next week or the week after. That happens every year with the Nile. Every year, the Nile, which during the dry months, which in most of Africa is the whole year, is not a stronger river. During the season, the warm season, when the snows melt in Uganda, the water travels up, and it's like clockwork. It gets to Egypt, and we're talking about a river overflooding its banks. It overfloods its banks for 100 miles in either direction at some points. And the Egyptians have made canals the Nile would kill people from the flooding. People would die from the flooding. That's what we find that the ancient Egyptians, they treated the Nile as a god. And they didn't know all this. They never came to Ma'i Haftarah Shir. And they didn't know where the water is coming from. And then one day, the god decides to start flooding. And it flooded. And they treated it as an Avodah Zarah. They felt that when the flooding killed people, the god was angry. So they would take people and shecht people as sacrifices to the Nile to pacify the god to calm down. Obviously, eventually it calmed down because the snows ran out. But that's the Avodah Zarah of the Nile. Now, in the ancient world, the Avodah Zarah, you know, people say in America the dollar is the Avodah Zarah. It's a, the Avodah Zarah is always that which gave sustenance to the people. You all know that the Plishtim, their Avodah Zarah was Dagon, was an image of a half man, half fish. Because the Plishtim lived in five coastal towns. Their parnasa was from fish. They were fishermen. They lived in Aza, in Ashkelon, in Ashdod, and in Gas, and in Ekron. Those are the five cities of the Plishtim. That's where they lived. So their parnasa was from fish, so their Avodah Zarah was a fish. Now you learn in Vayera that the angels came dressed as Arabs, as Bedouins, and Avram washed their feet. Their Avodah Zarah was the dust of the earth, of the road. So what kind of crazy Avodah Zarah is that? The dust of the road, the earth is Avodah Zarah. Look, who thinks that's God? But you see the Bedouins, they're the truckers of the ancient world. Right? We find Yosef was sold to Yishmaelim. Their parnasa was the road. Since their parnasa was the road, so they kissed the road. It's a, if you can compare it to, Ben Kaidish Lachael, to a baseball player with his lucky bat, you know, he kisses his bat when he's on a hitting streak, or, they do that, right? So, what's his bat? His bat is his parnasa. That's his thing. So if his bat is his parnasa, that's the, do the golfers do that too, or? Too much exercise to, but that's the Avodah, the Avodah Zarah of the ancient world. I know you claim Avodah Zarah makes no sense. You have to look at how it connected to their parnasa. So the Nile, which gave the lifeline to the people of Mitzrayim, the Nachal Mitzrayim, that was the Avodah Zarah of ancient Egypt. And that's why Paroi, being the god, so if he's a god, so he's got to be the boss over the river. He made the river, and Paroi somehow calculated when the river would overflow its banks, and he would announce his presence there. Maybe he had spies upstream telling him when the waters are coming, and he would go out to the river, and that would be his pretense of being a god. So that's the story of Sha'om Aliyah Iri Vani Sisani. It's my river, and I, my strength created it all. I created my own kingdom, and that's this idea. The Nile divides into two. See, in the ancient world, the truth is, if you look at even a map of the United States, the great cities are on waterways. There are exceptions. But for the most part, the great cities are in waterways because every society needs water to survive. And before they had piping and plumbing, every city had to be established along rivers. In the ancient world, there were no cities besides those along the rivers.
Most of the major interstates run along rivers.
Most interstates run along rivers. Because the interstates are probably just evolved from old wagon trails. So, Yerushalayim's an exception. Yerushalayim's an exception. There are exceptions to everything. But Yerushalayim had its own aquifers. Even in the time of Chizkiyahu, we have the aquifers that fed it water. My point being that in Old Mitzrayim, the Egypt was along the river. That was Egypt. Egypt was along the river. There was no Egypt besides along the river. Like, the Jews lived in one part of Egypt. It has a Churban of Egypt. Egypt is a gigantic country. It wasn't that way. The country was along the water. In Egypt, the Nile splits. And therefore, in the old world, Egypt was actually initially two countries, two kingdoms. When they talk about, the Egyptian Malchus was very, very long. It's one of the longest, of the ancient kingdoms. They don't go by kings, they go by dynasties. They have, 31 or so dynasties, that existed. Why is it called Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim. Ayim means duplicate, means double. Right? Who's Mitzrayim? Every country is, there's no country named by Ayim by the end. Ayim is Einayim, or Moznayim, means twin, means double. The old Mitzrayim was two kingdoms. It was a kingdom, the northern half of the Nile and the southern half of the Nile. And when they were unified, they became known as the twin Mitzar. We can call a Yerushalmi Jew is called Yerushalmi. An Egyptian is not called a Mitzrayimi, it's called a Mitzri. because Mitzar was the name of the country. When there were two, it became Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the two kingdoms together. Each kingdom was based on half of the Nile, on the break off of the Nile. That answers a Shvera Rashi. Rashi and Masei says that the land of Israel goes down to Nachal Mitzrayim, that's the Nile. It's very hard to understand that it goes all the way down into Africa. But half of the Nile, when it splits, hits the Mediterranean, just about at the tip, near the Suez Canal. It's likely that Rashi was referring to that area of Nachal Mitzrayim. At any rate, that's the background, I guess, for the Parsha as well as for the Haftarah. And here we're going to learn about the end of the dynasty, of the last dynasty of Egypt, which didn't end when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, which existed until the Churban Bayis Rishon. I guess tomorrow we're going to pick up and continue.